Thank you for the introduction. Thanks everyone for coming. So I'll be following Associate Professor Bradshaw's talk and talk to you about the resistance-guided therapy that we've implemented at Melbourne Sexual Health Centre. So I'm not going to repeat the same things, but we've basically seen azithromycin's efficacy really decrease over the past 10 years from about 80 to 90% to under 50%. So, and we're also seeing quinolone-resistant strains of MG emerge all around the world. And the latest figure we have is 15%. So a couple of years ago, we reached a point where, firstly, we couldn't treat all MG the same, so we couldn't assume it's one STI. Because the treatments will not work depending on the resistance status. And secondly, while we urgently needed new drugs, we also urgently needed to do something with what we have because our cure rate was really low. So we introduced what we called resistance-guided therapy. So the first thing we did was when our patients came in with symptoms or as an MG contact, we used to give them azithromycin 1 gram to alleviate their symptoms. Now, we stopped that, and we switched it with doxycycline. And the second thing we did was employ a new combined resistance and diagnostic assay called Resistance Plus from SpeedX. So this assay tells us if they have MG and if the MG has a 23S mutation. When the results came back, we could stratify the patients as a macrolide susceptible case or a macrolide resistant case. And in our macrolide susceptible arm, we followed doxycycline with 2.5 grams of azithromycin, and we achieved nearly 95% cure. And in our macrolide resistant arm, we followed doxycycline with 100 milligrams of cetafloxacin for 7 days, and we achieved an above 90% cure. So we were really pleased. And when we published this study, it was cited in the international guidelines and changed the guidelines, but there was one issue, and that is cetafloxacin is not actually available outside of Japan. So the guidelines just replace this with moxifloxacin. But in reality, we don't really know the clinical efficacy of moxifloxacin. We know ceta is better in vitro, but we don't actually know if that translates clinically and whether that actually is true following doxycycline. And the second thing we wanted to find out, well, we wanted to expand on, is this azithromycin regimen. Now, 2.5 grams of azithromycin was a new regimen at the time. It hasn't been trialed before as a standalone treatment or following doxycycline. And while we use this in our clinic, we only had 77 patients in our evidence base, so we wanted to expand this and continue this treatment. So our research question was, can research resistance-guided therapy with moxifloxacin or 2.5 grams of azithromycin cure more than 95% of MG and result in less de novo resistance? So this was a prospective clinical evaluation at Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, and we had a similar approach to our previous study. We gave our patients doxycycline for relieving their symptoms, and we tested them with resistance plus assay. When they came back as MG positive, we recalled them. And if they had a macrolide resistant strain, we then gave them moxifloxacin for 7 days. And if they had a macrolide susceptible strain, we then gave them 2.5 grams of azithromycin over 3 days. We counseled our moxifloxacin receiving patients extensively about the side effects of moxifloxacin. So they were counseled by the clinician, then the pharmacist, and then they were given a pamphlet to reiterate about tendonitis and other associated syndromes. We asked them to come back for a test of cure within 3 to 4 weeks after they completed their treatment, and we looked at their cure and fail with the associated confidence intervals. We excluded patients if they received any other antimicrobials, if they had a too early or a too late test of cure, or if they were at the highest risk of reinfection category, which I'll talk about in the next slide. And finally, our collaborators at Royal Women's Hospital did Sanger sequencing in our macrolide-resistant group because we wanted to find out about the prevalence of PARSI mutations in our population. So the latest data we had, as you saw in my first slide, was about 15%, but that was a couple of years ago, so we just wanted to see what happened. So at test of cure, clinicians recorded a number of variables to help us with the data analysis. So some of these were symptoms and the side effects of each drug, adherence to the regimen, and sexual behavior. So we told our patients to not have unprotected sex from the start of the first dose of doxycycline until it was time for test of cure. So this is about a 3 to 4 week period. But if they had sex, we wanted to know the circumstances. So we asked about their partner type, condom use, and the treatment of the partner. And we used this data to come up with a reinfection risk category. Now, we have validated this tool in our previous study, but we wanted to repeat it. So at the green, no risk, were patients who either had no sex or had only protected sex. So these patients were at no risk of reinfection. And at the number four in red, these patients had condomless sex with an ongoing untreated partner, and these people were at the highest risk of reinfection. We excluded them from our primary analysis because we had no way of knowing if it was a true treatment failure or if the treatment has worked and they become reinfected. But we included them in a secondary analysis that we've done, which looked at the odds of treatment failure by self-reported reinfection risk. So let's have a look at the results. We had 383 patients who received resistance-guided therapy. It was quite a young cohort, so our median age was 28. The median time to test of cure was 27 days, so within the IST recommendations. And most of this cohort were symptomatic. Half of our patients were MSM, and the other half were made up of women and heterosexual men. This was also a highly macrolide-resistant group, probably because we're an STI clinic and because we had a high proportion of MSM in this population, but we had basically 71.5% of patients who had a macrolide resistant strain. And in this group, doxycycline followed by moxifloxacin achieved a 92% of cure. And in our macrolide susceptible group, we had fewer patients. And when we used doxycycline followed by 2.5 grams of azithromycin in this group, we achieved above 95% of cure. And we were really pleased with this because it was very similar to our previous study, even though moxifloxacin appears to be less effective in vitro than cetafloxacin. Catriona mentioned in her talk that azithromycin resistance has been an issue, particularly after treatment failure. So we attempted to look at what proportion of our azithromycin failures developed de novo resistance. Our Sanger sequencing in this group unfortunately failed, so we're presenting you the worst case scenario, but selection of resistance was 4.6% in this group based on resistance plus assay. And finally, when we did our Sanger sequencing and to estimate the PASI mutations, we found that these were present in up to 22% of our population. So it was very high. And unfortunately, this translated to 16% of dual resistance in this population. So put it in the context, I believe in Machalek's systematic review, this was much, much lower than 16%. And finally, in our secondary analysis, so at the top, we're seeing no-risk patients in the green. So this was majority of the population. And at the bottom, we have high-risk patients, and it was 33 people. When we did our univariate logistic analysis, the only group with an increased risk of treatment failure were the high-risk patients. So these patients had nearly 4 times the odds of having a positive test of cure compared to the rest of them. And this was statistically significant. And this justified their exclusion from our primary analysis. I mentioned in the methods that we wanted to expand the evidence base on doxycycline followed by 2.5 grams of azithromycin. And you can see the pooled cure estimates and pooled de novo resistance on the screen now. So the green is the cure rate after we added up our numbers from 2 studies, and at the bottom we have 4.3% of failure. The really fantastic thing about this pooled cure estimate is the 3.8% of de novo resistance. So this is much, much lower than what has been reported following other azithromycin regimens. And looking at adherence and side effects, so we reported them for each drug. For all of them, adherence was more than 90%. For doxycycline, about 15% of people said yes to a side effect, and the top three were nausea, diarrhea, and photosensitivity. So that's a dermatological rash, and it's being blocked by the box, but that's 8 people. And for azithromycin, we had slightly more higher proportion of side effects reported at 22.7%. Most common were nausea, diarrhea, and gastrointestinal side effects, such as reflux and heartburn and other non-specific side effects. And for moxifloxacin, had the highest proportion of patients, so nearly a quarter of patients reported a side effect. Most common were nausea and diarrhea, but we also had dizziness, as the third most common. We got asked about tendonitis in this patient population, so I just wanted to point out, in our tendon/joint pain, we had one case of what looked like Achilles tendonitis. So this patient had bilateral Achilles tendon pain, which then self-resolved over 3 days. So there are a number of limitations to this study. Firstly, this was not a controlled trial, and because of that, we cannot really disentangle the effects of doxycycline from the second antibiotic. We haven't measured load in the study, but we have in our first study, so we do know that doxycycline significantly reduces load. So it's possible that doxycycline does the majority of the work and the second antimicrobial then comes and finishes it off, but we really cannot say or make a comment on that. All our side effects, adherence, and reinfection risk were self-reported. We think that the antimicrobial resistance may be higher in our SDI clinic than the general population. It was more than 70% of the study population. And as we have about a quarter of patients lost to follow up, we think that cure rate may be conservative. And this has been quite consistent across our studies because we have a high traveler population. But nevertheless, we think that those who are cured are less likely to come back for a test of cure. So in conclusion, we think that in the context of very high levels of macrolide resistance and at least 20% quinolone resistance, we achieved a very high level of cure and low level of de novo resistance following doxycycline azithromycin. Doxy azithro cure was more than 95%, and this was associated with a very low de novo resistance of 3.8%. And this was, as I said, much, much lower compared to following 1 gram of azithromycin, which is 12%. Doxymoxycure was 92%, and we thought this was going to be lower than doxycitacure of 92.2%, but it was actually identical. So, and my last point is that in 2017, dual class resistance was reported by Gerald Murray at Royal Women's Hospital in his study as 8.6%, and in the study we've reached up to 16%. So while this is depressing, it also really highlights the point that we really need resistance-guided strategies to cure MG, and particularly the next generation resistance assay will help us with that. So to conclude my talk, we've presented the evidence that underpins the current guidelines in how to treat macrolide-resistant MG. We think that while we need new drugs, this is the most easily implemented and widely available treatment option that we currently have. And we think it's very easy to implement in high caseload STI services. Thank you very much for listening.